Thank you. And I would like, first of all, thank you, the organizer, especially Zvi, for giving me this opportunity of being here presenting these results. I'm going to show you some experimental results which come from electrical characterization of porous silicon. And making this experiment, it can happen that you find some behavior which can be seen as typical hallmark of glassy dynamics, such as slow non-exponential relaxation and aging effects. So I'm going to show you this and to make some comments with comparing these results with some other behavior observed in other systems. So I would start just with a few words about the system I'm going to talk about, which is mesoporous silicon. You can fabricate it just by electrochemical etching of P plus of a heavily doped silicon, and where in the starting material you have a relatively high free carrier density, 10 to the 19 per cubic centimeter. And then what you get is a material very disordered, where you have some silicon nanocrystals which are interconnected, and where the free carriers can be evaluated, for instance, experimentally by infrared spectroscopy, decreased by one order of magnitude with respect to the pristine material, but the conductivity drops of five or even more orders of magnitude. The typical size of these silicon structures which compose this, let's say, sponge is of the order of tens of nanometers. And the mechanism which is almost accepted and which have been reported in the literature by Volker Lehmann for the first time in 1995 to explain this drop of the conductivity of many orders of magnitude despite a decrease of free carriers only of one order of magnitude is related to the presence of many traps at the surface. We have in this material a huge surface, and at the surface we can have many traps for the holes, and these traps can act not only as can have an effect not only in depleting the carrier density, but also in decreasing the mobility just by Coulombic repulsion of the other carriers incoming. So you can imagine, for instance, a trap which has trapped a hole, and this trap may be located in a site where the pathway for the carriers is constricted. And in this case, the other incoming carriers cannot go through these nanoconstrictions because they see the Coulombic repulsion. So then, this is a simple but widely accepted model. And about the behavior with the temperature, what is normally reported in the literature is that in this range, which is the range relevant for the experiment I'm going to show you, the conductance is thermally activated with an activation energy of the order of hundreds of millielectron volt. And if you look at the current voltage characteristics, you have a non-ohmic superlinear behavior. Let's say that you can look, this is a log-log plot of current and voltage. You can see that at a low electric field, you can still have almost an ohmic behavior, but then the slope increases and you have a superlinear behavior.
So the activation energy is much larger than what you expect from conventional semiconductor,
Yes, yeah, actually this is not a semiconductor. This is something more toward an insulator, let's say. It is it was a semiconductor, heavily doped, then it becomes, the conductivity drops of 5 or 6 orders of magnitude with respect to the resistive material.
But in terms of, this as you explained, has to do with mobility, but in terms of density of carriers, mm-hmm. probably the behavior is still semiconducting. Are you saying that as far as the density of carriers, it's like semiconductor, but as far as mobility, it is thermally activated?
10 to 18 is close to transition in silicon.
What?
10 to 18 density is close to metal transition in silicon.
It's 10 to the 19.
But for the 19.
That's before etching. Before etching.
But metal insulator has to do with the nature of the states. It's not does not have to do with the availability of charge carriers, separation of charge carriers.
It's under some insulator.
But he says that it's not under some insulator because the theory is that it has to do with Coulomb blocking.
Are you asking about homogeneous silicon?
I'm asking about this
system. The system is
It has to be microcrystallized, or you could do it with a glass too. Silicon
could
be amorphous thing and then
edge. It is crystalline, the starting silicon.
It has to necessarily
because making porous the amorphous silicon is you get another material, it is more complicated, the electrochemical etching process.
The etching goes on the face.
It is because you need many mobile free carriers available at the interface with electrolyte. So if you go to the amorphous silicon, you cannot have something very reproducible, such as is for silicon, so it's different.
How do you know what is the concentration of the free carriers?
Where? In porous silicon?
No, in this system. In porous
silicon. By making a Fourier transform infrared spectroscopy, you measure the absorption in the infrared, and you can just model very well the absorption by through the absorption, you can get a reasonable free carrier density, and you can do that even. There is a huge literature on this. You can do this in many different conditions. So when you know that you can inject carriers and you can follow it in the infrared spectroscopy. So. Then if you want some other proof about the traps, there is electron paramagnetic resonance, which can see this kind of traps because the traps are fundamentally silicon dangling bonds, which are paramagnetic centers. So you can even map this. It is well assessed what I'm saying.
Okay, so you're saying that the effect of the traps is not only to reduce the
carrier density,
but also to dramatically reduce the carrier density.
No, it's the opposite. It is not only to reduce the carrier density because the important thing this is a minor change. The major change is in the mobility. Okay.
This is minor to a drop of
one order.
Yeah. Yes. With respect to 6 order magnitudes, it's minor. It's 10^-6 the ratio. So I would say that it's minor. So this is just a comment about the fact that this is still what is normally reported in the literature about the behavior of the conductance as a function of the temperature. This is the standard Arrhenius plot. But what I have put here is a line in order to point out that there is actually a deviation from a pure activated behavior, And indeed, if you make the experiment, these are my experiments, and you get more points, and you go even to a lower temperature, you can see something like this. So the activated should be a line in the log, in the Arrhenius plot. And then if you plot the log-log of this, you can see that there is not a clear slope, there is not a power law, you cannot get an exponent, but you cannot get even the exponent 1. And just in order to give you an idea of which are the slopes involved here, this is the slope 1/2, this is the slope 1/4. I would also mention that there is one paper in the literature reporting that in this range, they claim that there is variable range hopping, Mott behavior with 1/4. But this is, I mean, these are my experimental results. I cannot conclude so much.
Does your IV current voltage characteristic show any consistency with hopping?
Okay.
If it doesn't change with temperature, then it is not hopping.
Yeah. My opinion on this is the following. In the current voltage characteristics, we can see, as I showed before. No, sorry, this is the first. Okay, an almost linear, but which is not linear actually, and an almost super and a super linear. What Zvi is referring to is that in the hopping in a current voltage characteristic where you are only observing the effect of the hopping, you should see this knee here moving with the temperature, and I don't see this almost. I ascribe this to the fact that this kind of shape in the current voltage also can come from a space charge limited current effects. Okay, that this is another stuff. But in the space charge limited current, you have this superlinear behavior, which only depends on the geometric parameters of the system, of the thickness of the insulator, let's say. But I would also say that we cannot exclude that there is also the hopping effect, which is hidden in these current voltage characteristics. We cannot conclude it. I mean, it is not an inconsistency. I mean, it's.
I'm saying that one does not have any other evidence or any evidence in the first place that it is hopping.
Mm-hmm.
Cannot exclude it, but you cannot confirm it either.
Yeah, of course. I agree. I cannot exclude and I cannot. Yeah. That's what I mean. So then what is relevant to the glass behavior is this, is that when you go to do electrical measurements on this material, you can find that the system often does respond very slowly to external stimuli, which can be a variation of the temperature, an increase of the temperature. This is the current, so the conductance, let's say, or a variation of the bias voltage.
Sorry, what do you call the first one temperature?
It's a red line.
This is the temperature. You start from room temperature, you go to 315 Kelvin, and you can observe that the current increase, but then just relax very, very slowly. These are 70,000 seconds. Okay? This is just to show that the system is not fast at all.
So
Yeah.
You change the temperature by changing the ambient temperature, or what do you mean?
I have my sample on mounted on the sample holder in the cryostat. In the cryostat, you have a heater, and the heater also have a thermometer just beside, and then a feedback, and then you control the temperature, and that's all. Normal. Then here you change the active field, or even in this case, this is the sample in vacuum, and then I let ammonia gas flow in the chamber, and you can also see this, okay? Which cannot be explained just by saying it is the molecule that are it is the pressure of the gas which is going to the equilibrium, because if I measure the pressure, I can see the equilibrium of the pressure here just after a couple of minutes. So this is the, let's say, the phenomenology motivating the study that I'm going to show you now. So in order to study this kind of dynamics, of slow dynamics, we need a protocol, and we cannot use, very unfortunately, the gate, a protocol which involves the gate field effect, because for technical reasons, in these samples, I cannot performed field effect measurements. So we should find something, a different protocol with respect, for instance, to what is used by Zwi in the indium oxide devices to study this kind of dynamics. And this is a so-called stress aging protocol, where you use just a variation of the bias voltage in order to excite the system out of equilibrium. So this is the current, the DC conductance measured, initially measured. You are almost at in an equilibrium or in a metastable state, how you want to call it. And then you excite the system just by increasing the bias voltage, and you see that the current slowly increases. Then you go back to the initial value of the bias voltage, and you will observe relaxation, which is slow and which is not exponential. So we use this kind of protocol to study this relaxation as a function of this time, Tw, the waiting time, in order to find the non-exponential function which can describe this relaxation, and to study the dynamics as a function of the experimental conditions, such as the temperature.
Excuse me, I didn't understand. How do you apply the field, please?
The field is just the DC bias voltage.
Okay.
So you have two leads. Two contact, two metal contacts. You bias the device at a given relatively low voltage. Then you increase this voltage, and you observe that the current increases, but then continuously increases for a long time. And then you go back, and you don't have the instantaneous or almost instantaneous recovery of the pristine value of the current, but you observe a slow relaxation of this.
Are there any heating effects, like you'll suddenly increase the voltage, current increases, then the sample can be heated, and then mm-hmm. temperature increases?
Yeah,
this
might be.
That would be the explanation. Okay?
Might be also that there is some increase in the local temperature, yeah? Might be.
So you go from 10 to 300 more or less?
That's too large for
Yeah, in this case, yes, 10 to 300 volt per centimeter. But you can vary these values. It is not strict, let's say, as an indication.
Was there an attempt to repeat this experiment at different temperatures and see that at higher temperature this stress aging is suppressed? Or
if you want to see the effect of the temperature,
you
have to wait.
This is just a
beginning. I will. Indeed, of course, in order to get insight into the dynamics, it is very relevant to study the temperature dependence. So I will go to it.
Like here, what was the temperature? The ambient temperature.
Here was room temperature. Yeah. But it is a room temperature controlled, I mean, because I am still in a vacuum chamber in the cryostat, and I'm controlling, for instance, 295 Kelvin. It is not random. So this is the experiment actually, another insight on the experiment. You can both actually increase or decrease the bias voltage, and you can see this kind of effect. So this is just to give you an idea of the fact that also this, this which is called excitation, is in fact a relaxation toward a new metastable state for the system. Okay. And what we study in the experiment is the variation which respect to the equilibrium. Okay? So for the relaxation, we study G, the variation G of T minus refer to this value.
Yes, yes.
Okay? This is the delta. So what you observe is that if you plot, if you make if you do this experiment for different TW values, TW is the time of the excitation, then you get this kind of relaxation after the excitation. You can see that you have a dependence, a clear dependence on the time TW. And that in a semi-log plot, you may say that you have an almost logarithmic behavior for T much smaller than TW. This is something with is somehow similar to what observed in the indium oxide electron lattice. Then you can also try to see what happens if you plot the same curves just by against T over TW. You can observe that there might be a simple scaling law. So this is what is called the simple aging or full aging. And however, you already can see here that the curve which refers to the larger TW seems to deviate somehow from this collapse. Yeah.
And if you made a smaller amplitude, it would also deviate in the other sense, because linear response doesn't allow for that. So if your step would be epsilon, you would do this kind of thing and you wouldn't get any T over T weight. This is because of linear response, just so you would get deviations in both directions for long times, for strong fields and for small fields.
Okay.
No, I'm saying that this is that we have discussion in infinite discussions with me. This is just a little window that, or a big window that, that is linear, but it is not something essential of the problem, because in both directions, very strong excitation and very weak excitation, you cannot possibly have that.
Mm-hmm. But
I don't see why you can't have it in a very small excitation.
A linear response.
You do, but
you cannot. Nobody said it's not. But you can have a long relaxation in the memory of it.
But in any case, he's talking about something else, and maybe you let him continue.
Yeah, because I'm really interested is actually not in the simple aging, but in the deviation from the simple aging. Because what you can see is that with increasing the waiting time, TW, you make very evident a systematic gradual departure from the full scaling low T over TW. You see, this is for the red one is for 6,000 seconds, 3,000 seconds, and the pink one 6,000 seconds.
So the relaxation is faster than it would be suggested by. By the full simple aging picture. Pink goes to the left.
Yeah. Let's say that not the entire time TW spent in the excitation is relevant for the system, but just a part of it.
Isn't this exactly what you would expect if you reach some type of equilibrium or quasi-equilibrium at the higher?
Yeah. This is actually due to the, and I will try to show you this, that what it is happening is that you are approaching the typical characteristic time of the slow relaxation of the system, the intrinsic time of the system. You're approaching it. As you approach it, you deviate.
Yeah.
So you are also not getting a good logarithmic fit then, when that happens?
Yeah, that's right. These two things go together, and I will show you this. Yeah. This is just when I first made this observation, I just tried to look in the literature something which might be similar. And so what I found is that, for instance, in the spin glasses, there is the so-called sub-aging, which is even in this case a departure from the full aging scaling low. And what is shown in some cases is that you can still reobtain the collapse of all the curves just by adding an exponent here, but then you have the problem with this exponent because it seems that it is not clear where it comes from, and it is not so clear if it should be universal. So, anyhow, I did try to do the same, just looking if I could reach. I could find an exponent allowing.
But if you add an exponent to this scaling function, it means that it doesn't dimensions. It means that either you have some cutoff scale, or
And there could always be a microscopic scale. I
understand. Yeah. So there must be. It means that there is some.
It doesn't have to be a long time scale. It could be a microscopic scale just from dimensional arguments, which wouldn't hurt you at all.
Okay.
Sorry. So it didn't work. That's the relevant comment. So now. The thing is that in order to understand and to explain this kind of deviations from the full aging and from the full scaling law, it seems that we have to understand and to have a model to describe the relaxation.
Just a little question.
Yeah.
Did you try different amplitudes? How does it change? I mean, is the non simple aging behavior manifest at longer waiting times when you are doing the step with less amplitude?
No. It is not really with amplitude. You refer to the amplitude of the excitation.
Understand.
No. It is not with changing. In a reasonable range, let's say the amplitude of the excitation, nothing changes.
So essentially, the
essentially, if you have the deviation for beyond a given TW, you get the same value of this TW. So this is now a description of how. We can try to describe the relaxation curves, and I would like to mention first of all that all the work which I'm going to present from now it is the result of many discussions and collaboration with Ariel, Amir, and so this first of all. Then. Let's start from the observation which was already pointed out 60 years ago in this paper, and thank you again to Ariel to pointing out to me this just this morning, is that if you have a thermally activated process, so that the relaxation rate has an exponential dependence on the energy barriers in the system, and you have a uniform distribution of these energies, that then it follows that you can have a broad distribution of these relaxation rates, which goes as 1 over lambda. Then I can describe, I can try to describe the relaxations as a weighted sum of decay exponential, where the weight is given by this 1 over lambda function. And what you get is this exponential integral function. In this exponential integral function, you have these parameters, which are the cutoffs of the distribution of the rates, which are lambda min and lambda max. And what is relevant for the slow dynamics, of course, is the minimum rate in the system, the lambda mean, because the 1 over lambda mean would be this intrinsic time that we were referring to before. And what was also pointed out by Mike Polaritz, Pio Vadial, in this paper is that then with a distribution like this, and this function can be reduced to, can be approximated by a logarithm when the time t is much smaller than 1 over lambda mean. So then further step is to try to describe really the experiment where you have an excitation and then relaxation and you observe the aging. An important thing to observe here is that also the excitation can be seen as a slow relaxation with a slow departure from the initial equilibrium condition. So even in this case, you can describe the excitation, this delta G, as the exponential integral of this form. And then after after the time tw, you have that the system, you interrupt the excitation and the system relaxes back to the equilibrium, starting from an amplitude which is given by this function at the time tw. From this, it follows that the response of the system after an excitation for a time tw can be described by the f of t minus f of t plus tw. And if you are in the case where this approximation holds, I mean the logarithmic approximation holds, it direct follows that you have simple agent, because you have the difference of two logarithms. And you don't have anymore the lambda mean in this function, because it cancels out. And you just have this function describing the response. This okay. This thing has been pointed out already by Thierry Grenet with a phenomenological approach, and then there is the paper by Ariel Amir, Yuval Oreg, and Joe Inrim at Weizmann about the importance of the fact that this logarithm can follow in this case. So full aging should be observed only when the tw is much smaller than 1 over lambda mean. And this might be the reason for the observed full aging failure in our case. So what I'm going to show you now is the consistency of these assumptions of this theory with the experimental results. Okay, we have tried to fit the data just using one fitting parameter, which is lambda mean, and this is the result. You can see here again the same function, the same relaxation curves as before, and the pink one here is let's say the full aging curve, where the relaxation is described just by a logarithm of 1 plus tw over t. And then you have the departure, and you can see that all the curves can be fitted very well by the theory. Each fitting curve is just the exponential integral with the same lambda mean, which in this case was estimated to be 1 over 4,500.
Is the lambda mean dependent on conductivity of the system?
I would say yes.
Very strongly, I believe. More or less one of a shift.
I can say that with increasing the resistivity, the system becomes slower. So lambda mean decreases.
Lambda mean?
Okay.
Decreases with what? With the conductivity or with the resistivity?
Increasing the resistivity, the system becomes slower.
Increasing.
Or
resistivity,
the system's
larger.
Times become larger.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay. Yes, that's it. Yeah. Linear.
I don't know this because I don't have enough data to tell this. So if you look at the same curves in a log-log, you can see that it is actually a good fit. And what I would like to stress is that we have only one fitting parameter, which is this lambda mean. And so the curves at small tw are here. Okay, this is hidden here. And they go with the logarithm. And they have the departure. You can follow it. And if you do the same with the excitation curve, you can also fit the excitation curve with an exponential integral with the same lambda mean. So it seems that this lambda mean.
A question. Why the excitation increase g, unlike in SV experiment?
Because in SV experiment, it's actually totally different. You have a feed effect. You only change. You only change the position of the Fermi level, and then you are relaxing toward the same value of conductance at the end, taking it into account the normal field effect. But then if you subtract this, in this case, you are going toward a new different configuration.
What's the conductivity for this time?
Finally. The conductivity?
Yes.
Okay.
The time is about 10 to minus 4 seconds. So what's the conductivity?
The resistivity usually, I remember the resistivity.
Okay.
The resistivity can be of the order of a kilo ohm centimeter. Kilo ohm centimeter, yeah.
And from what you said before, the mean doesn't depend a lot on the amplitude of the step.
Does not depend a lot, no.
Yeah, but maybe make this one.
I think that we get it. The other question, and I'm not sure that.
In a SV experiment,
yeah.
The rule is that whenever you excite,
yeah.
The conductivity is larger, always. But here in your case, it's the other way around.
No.
Why it keeps increasing the conductivity?
Same thing. And this is similar. There are other differences, but that's very similar.
The conductivity, when you change, it keeps increasing.
Yeah.
I mean, in Gellis, I think talking about the gate voltage protocol as opposed to stress agents.
No, this is the stress agents.
Yeah, it's just a different protocol. Yeah, so you can see here that if you plot the response of the system as a function of f of t minus of f of t plus tw, where f is the exponential integral of lambda mean t, you have a collapse of all the curves. And instead, if you do this by plotting.
I'm sorry, what was the difference really between the previous plot that you showed and the fitting of all the
Nothing. It is always the same thing. It is always the fit is good. Okay? But I think that this can help to. I mean, I wanted to stress this fact that in this case, if you do a plot like this, you have, of course, of linear curves going through the origin. Then, if you make the assumption that your response is logarithmic. And that you are in the full aging regime, you get something like this, that only the curves with a small tw have a linear behavior in this plot going to the origin. Then you observe a departure like this with increase in the tw, because you are increasing this product here, lambda mean times tw. This is what it is relevant and what dictates the fact if the logarithm is a good approximation and if the full aging should appear or not. So this way, we can experimentally estimate an intrinsic time of the system, which is related to 1 over lambda, which is relevant for the slow relaxation, because if we fix Tw and we change some other parameters of the experiment, if we observe something like this, we can ascribe this departure to different lambda mean. Okay? So we are able to say that the system in one case or in the other case is slower or is faster. this is just to stress the fact that this 1 over lambda mean, which can be also called tau, is an intrinsic property of the system, and which can be different, for instance, if you just want to measure the dynamics of your system, you say, okay, I'm going to define arbitrary a time, characteristic time T star, which will be the time at which the response get to a constant value. This is different, okay? This is arbitrary, this time T star, and this is related to an intrinsic property of the material. So here is an example of how you can carry out a direct comparison of the dynamics just changing the experimental condition of the sample. In this case, it is the same sample as the curves I have shown until now, but was measured after 2 months staying in the ambient air. What you can see is that, okay, this is the previous one, and this is this experiment for Tw 3000 seconds. So this is the curve of 3000 seconds of the system 2 months before, let's say, and you can see that the younger the system, let's say, the larger the lambda mean, which means that this system after 2 months becomes slower. What happens during these 2 months in
the room temperature?
At room temperature in the lab. What happens? Again, what it is known from some spectroscopy is that the surface oxidation increases, the number of these silicon dangling bonds of traps increases the density, and this is almost what happens. So this is why I say that more traps are likely to be there after 2 months.
This is real aging.
Yeah, of course. Of course. But this is just to show that it seems to be there an indication that more traps lead to a slower dynamics.
Stefano, what happens to the resistance of the sample after 2 months?
Increases.
But
without air, this does not happen.
Yeah, not air, it does not happen.
Interesting.
Ah, it stay on the stage. Yeah. The fact is that where you make porous silicon, you make it in a HF solution, hydrofluoric acid. And so when you extract the sample from the electrochemical cell, just you have silicon hydrides at the surface, silicon bond to hydrogen. And these bonds are not stable at room temperature, so the hydrogen can go away and you can have silicon dangling bonds. This is a simplified picture, but more or less.
Can you help the system to age faster by heating it up adiabatically and then cooling it down back adiabatically? So you will assist the system to reach better equilibrium, better cause equilibrium.
I don't know. I'm not sure that I have understood your question.
Okay. You take your sample, and you can imagine doing two experiments. In one case, you leave this sample for 2 months and you know, measure the change in resistivity, in the response, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
In the second type of experiment, you take this sample, you heat it up to temperature of 1,000 degrees, and then you cool it down back to 290 degrees. And
in presence of oxygen or air or so I'm going to oxidize it mainly. I get another material as 1,000 in oxygen.
Okay, but this would mean that the resistance will increase.
Yes, of course. Becomes silicon dioxide.
Okay, but when you left the system in the free air for 2 months, it also to some certain extent oxidized, yes?
Yes, but
I don't think the qualitative difference between, you know, leaving it for 2 months, letting it oxidize gradually, or doing it in lab faster.
The thing is that you get different materials. I'm not sure about this.
Okay.
I mean, if you go to 1,000 Kelvin in the presence of oxygen, you're going to oxidize everything there, and you don't have.
This is exactly what happens for.
No, it doesn't happen like this because it is just a very slow process where you have just that the silicon hydrides, and you can follow it by Fourier transform infrared spectroscopy, decrease. And the silicon hydride, if you heat the sample at 150 degrees Celsius, go away. So, but you still have something. If you after 2 months, you just have that you have some more of these traps, and these traps are more stable also because they are more stable if there are some oxygen around. So
I mean, I guess my question is that I don't understand what is the borderline between doing something and having a new material or doing something and changing things slowly. Suppose I take my take your system.
I characterize it.
Let me just finish. Yeah. So suppose I don't heat it up to 1,000 degrees and cool it down. Suppose I heat it up by 70 degrees and cool it down. Will it be a new material or will it be just the same but slightly aged material? When do you put the borderline between you?
It depends. It depends on the system and the conditions.
Yeah.
And so you should know that, don't you cook? If you cook, you know.
Yeah, I mean.
Not
however, the relevant thing here is just to see that there is a strong dependence of this characteristic time of the system of this density of traps at the surface. Okay.
Did you say that? Are you asking the Marxist question in the atmosphere of, say,
sorry?
No, Marx was dealing with the question. When do we have a quantitative difference and none comes a quantitative?
Yeah. Yeah, you need oxygen.
Yeah.
Water vapor. Okay, let's go to the effect of the temperature, which is interesting. So, what happens is that with cooling down the sample, it becomes very, very hard to excite the system out of equilibrium just by varying the bias voltage, and I can only say that below about 190-180 Kelvin, I was not able to find experimental conditions where observe this effort.
But over this range that you can excite the system and watch the dynamics, how does the dynamics depend on temperature?
Yeah, it's the next slide. So this is again the same kind of plot as before, and in this case you can see that with increasing the temperature, lambda min increases. So here you have the same TW, and for the lower temperature, 280 Kelvin, you can see that the logarithm is almost a good approximation. You can extrapolate it as a line going to the origin, but you cannot do this for the 300 Kelvin when you have something like this and this deviation. And this is what you expect when the lambda min T increases, lambda min TW increases. As TW is the same, it must be lambda min that increases. So the system is the characteristic time of the system increases upon cooling.
So by how much for this change of maybe less than 10% of temperature, by how much did the lambda min change?
The fact is that when you go here, you cannot measure anymore anything. I can tell you that
certainly exponential.
I don't know, because I don't have enough data, because the fact is that all the following curves at lower temperature all goes here. So it is easy to discriminate from this from this, and maybe from another one this, which is
okay,
even larger.
Another temperature we can still measure this, right? Narrow the range of temperature.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is that in this case, let's say that the curve time is of the order of 500 seconds, I think. And in this case, 400 seconds, sorry. So you can see it here. This cannot be fitted by the same exponential integral with the same lambda mean. And you need a time larger than, I can remember, 1,000 seconds, I would say. So this can be, it is not linear.
Is it reversible when you go back to lower temperature?
Yeah. The experiment was done like this. This room temperature, then cool, and then go back. I didn't plot the go back curve, but it is overlapping here, so it is
overlapping.
Yeah.
How quickly does it go back if you cool it?
I have to wait mainly one day before making the.
And then the lean adjusts itself in one day. Comes to.
Yes, I would say. Yeah.
Do you have any other way to estimate lambda mean?
Sorry?
Do you have any other way to estimate lambda mean, any check?
I'm already happy with this, because it is
just a parameter.
Yes.
The only parameter.
Yes, of course.
And lambda mean, which is so long, it's something.
Are you saying that the temperature can be explained with just a change in lambda mean?
Why is it long?
Yeah.
The density of lambda is the same.
Why is it long?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. This change it can be explained just by the change of lambda mean. Yes.
Do you have any insight into the microscopics? Can you, for example, conclude that if you increase lambda mean, that it has something to do with collective effects? Or?
Not from this. I mean. What may be discussed maybe is the dependence on the density of the traps. I mean, what the feeling is the lambda mean does depend of the density of traps. Then the question is, the dependence of the dynamics on the density is or not an indication from the presence of correlated dynamics and interaction?
I have an experimental question. Did you try to look at the noise?
Yeah.
Conductance noise.
Yeah.
Something you're going to talk about?
Yeah, it is just one slide because it's very preliminary analysis that we have done with Ariel.
Between the 1 over 8 noise and this effect.
Yeah, this is interesting. So, this is a comment slide and also maybe a summary where I wanted to point it out. Some difference which can be seen with respect to the what observed in the indium oxide electron glass.
Is lambda mean the frequency where one wave noise starts?
No, I'm just talking about what Mike was asking, but I know some. What is the origin of this effect? What is the dynamics due to?
Flow dynamics. Should be, but flex should be. Lambda mean should be.
Dynamics due to? What is changing slowly? What is the thing that changes slowly? That's, I think, what I'm trying to understand.
Yes, but I'm trying to find another way to one of noise to measure lambda mean.
I think that it might be related to the population of the traps.
So that's great failure.
But so that the population increases increasing temperature?
I would expect that
the other way around.
That with increasing the temperature, the traps are you have more empty traps than occupied traps. But then. I don't know what else. So what I wanted to point out here are two main differences with respect to the indium oxide case. So what I observe in this case is that with decreasing the free current density, but with increasing the traps density, the dynamics becomes slower. On the other hand, it is reported from the indium oxide samples is that with increasing the free current density, the dynamics slow down. This is a qualitative difference. Another qualitative difference is that in this case, the dynamics slows down with decreasing the temperature, and this is not observed so far in the indium oxide devices. So these are two main points, I think, two main differences. So about the noise. So this is the noise measured at two different temperature. I would call this just preliminary results, which has to be checked. But I think it is already interesting to put them on the table because what so far I have verified that systematically the noise measured at high temperature, so at room temperature or higher, displays a deviation from the 1 over F behavior, while the other the noise at lower and lower temperature display an almost perfect 1 over F. And this is just a very preliminary try. The thing that we have tried with Ariel is to see if this deviation here might be consistent with the lambda mean estimated from the slow relaxation. Okay, this is the result. I don't want to convince you, but this is the result now.
So it's consistent or not?
same still.
So the full line, the thicker full line is an estimation was
is a fit. Is a fitting. Yeah.
Is a fitting or it is
no not fitting.
Okay, this is quite systematic. Again, this you can see here that you have some kind of deviation from the 1/F. You don't have never where you are at low temperature, and then if you go at the really low temperature for the system, which is at 100. You see the opposite. So you see that the power increases. Okay. I would skip this because it's already late and it's not so. This was just to show that, of course, even some memory effects can be observed, but. I just would like to conclude now because it's late, and so just to summarize what I have shown here is that in this experiment it seems that the slow relaxation and aging can be described quite well by the exponential integral, which follows from assuming 1/λ distribution for the rates. That so an intrinsic characteristic time of the system, which is relevant for the slow dynamics, can be experimentally evaluated. The dynamics slows down with decreasing the temperature and with increasing the trapped density. So this system can be useful maybe for getting insight into this kind of behaviors. So I would conclude here.
I think this is a kind of, you know, open time seminar, and I saw something interesting in your previous slide. So can I ask you something
to
memory? It's something about memory that I believe, right?
This experiment is the same as the stress aging, but in this case I don't start from the equilibrium. I don't start from a low electric field, but I start from already high electric field. So I excite the system, then I excite the system even more, just increasing. And then I observe the relaxation. And what I change here is if the first excitation is the time of the first excitation is TW1 and of the second is TW2, I keep constant TW2 and I vary TW1. And what you can see is that the following relaxation depends on the time TW1. And so this is a sort of memory, but.
So actually, so you get like a dip there and.
The thing which is maybe some counterintuitive might be counterintuitive is the fact that the response can also be non-monotonic. Mm-hmm. So the system goes the conductance. Goes down and then up again, but actually we have seen that just using the exponential integral and simulating the response of the system with this protocol, also this kind of effect can be reproduced. So
if you subtract basically the one, if you wouldn't do the second thing, you could measure that and then subtract it. Would they then all fall on top of each other?
You mean if you extrapolate?
Yeah, or you could measure it in the first one.
Yeah, I've done this not in this experiment, another one, but yes, I would say that you can see that at the end what seems to be is that the system relax toward the extrapolated curve.
If the pulse when it lasts is the current is flowing that way, and then you measure at the end of the pulse the response to a current that is at 90 degrees, does that system care at all in what direction you aged, in what direction the current
is something flowing? That I never tried.
What do you think?
So you mean I have mainly four contacts?
Yes, yes.
And
you try at 90 degrees and you age a bit in one direction, a bit in the other. Does it help you to age with the wrong direction of current for future going in the 90 degrees direction?
I mean, if what matters is the occupation of these traps, this occupation might be affected also by a current which is perpendicular. But I don't have any other idea at the moment about what could happen. I never thought about this experiment, but it might be an interesting thing, I'd say.
I think that temperature dependence of lambda min is kind of, there is an interesting question that does lambda min, in principle, when you lower the temperature without any collective effect, if you keep the same number of traps, lambda min will decrease because everything becomes slower, including the lambda min at the higher temperature, right?
Yeah.
So all the lambda goes down, including the lambda mean.
The lambda mean, yes.
And the other possibility is that it may be a collective effect. So do you know actually if you change the number of traps when you change the temperature? And
No, I only expect to change the number of charged traps, of occupied traps. I mean,
you do change it, because there is a possibility that with the same number of traps, you just make the lambda mean at the high temperature smaller at the low temperature because it's an activated behavior, right?
Yeah.
So, do you know what actually happens if you change the number of traps, really, or if it's just a matter of slowing down all the traps that already exist?
I don't know. I don't expect the number of traps to change.
You don't? That's okay.
I'm not sure. Yeah.
Did you try to excite the system by other means?
Yes. I mean, I tried to just in my cryostat I have also a quartz window, so you can shed light, and what you see is that even in that case you may have a slow response of the excitation by white light, huh? Just.
But don't leave the light on. A pulse of light, would it be a reaction after that? A short pulse, not a slow effect like with temperature or with what you call stress.
No, a short.
Just a pulse of light. Did you try a pulse of light? Short pulse. Of light.
Not a short pulse. I mean, I tried 10 seconds. And switch the light off, and then look at
what was the light? What kind of light?
Light what was just white light. Halogen lamp, white light. And what you see there is mainly you see a fast exponential decay and then a slow one, and then the relaxation. You don't relax back to the pristine initial value, but you stay at a higher value.
So what happens in your view? Does the material change?
No.
Why does it come back to the same original value?
I don't know. Maybe because the excitation is so high that you cannot go back to the pristine.
That's what we usually call that it's not the same material anymore.
I don't know. So you still have the same network. You excite the system in this network, so that it is not able anymore to go back.
Let's define the question a little better.
Yeah.
You excite the system with light, but to the same change of conductance as you do with the other method where it was reversible. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Under this condition, would it come back to the same original value or not? Does it come back or not?
With light, no.
Okay.
Might be able to heat it, though.
No. It did not come back. That it did not. Yeah.
The light is ionizing the trap. Right.
Yeah, I expect so. Yeah. But it is not clear how it happens. There are many papers on persistent photoconductivity and don't know. Actually, I didn't report the results because I don't have a clear picture of what is happening. So.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you for your attention.